pick for scraps amongst the ruins at the end of history. You should know, because you encounter them every day. Between the towering buildings of a fallen empire, we find the Fellaheen, the historyless men, who know nothing of the turning of the cosmic wheel and find themselves outside of civilization itself. Cut loose from the great chain of being, they represent the loam into which our dying culture will return. That is, unless we choose to take up the burden once again. This Fellaheen condition is the subject we explore in issue 4 of Islander magazine, on sale while stocks last and available worldwide at shop.loadseaters.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Loadseaters, episode 1233 for Tuesday the 19th of August 2025. I'm your host Luca, joined today by Bo and Josh.
Hello,
how are you both
again
today?
Yeah, good thanks.
Cheery, good.
I'm very good.
Good. Well, your segment gives us reasons for optimism, doesn't it?
Yes, I've come back as a ray of hope, and that is...
That's what you're at, the office's little ray of hope, aren't you, Josh?
I'd like to think so.
Well, for Josh's segment, we're going to be talking about the English raising the colours. We're then going to be talking about the very latest Ukraine nothing burger. And then we're going to be talking about the seeming arrival of the Gazan refugees. So, with all that said, Josh, over to you.
Okay, there's been a welcome trend in basically England, I would say. That's where I've seen it, of people flying the flag, going out of their way to raise the flag in lots of different places, mainly on lampposts. And it's good. It's a very organic thing. It doesn't seem to have been necessarily orchestrated. Just a sudden outpouring of patriotism, which, you know, although that's not going to change the fate of Britain or anything, the second order effects are quite important, and we're going to discuss them, because I think actually in terms of optics and how it can potentially force the government to make errors, that it's actually a very good and sort of sound move. But first, another thing that is a good and sound move is picking up a copy of Islander magazine. As always, it's beautiful. I mean, look at how beautiful it is. It's one of the best magazines that's out there. I wish I could do a Trump impression. It's also quite affordable. It's physical. It even smells nice.
It's organic.
It is.
Organic produce.
And no matter how much internet censorship we get in Britain, they'll never be able to take this away from you. So get it while you still can. With that out of the way, let's go to Birmingham, shall we? Which is a sentence I've never said before. But here we are. This is surprisingly patriotic for Britain. You know, you do see the flags flying, but there's one on pretty much every lamppost. Things look neat and tidy, because obviously this is a white enclave, let's be honest. It doesn't look like the other parts of Birmingham. It's got to be a sort of middle-class suburb, right? But it's good to see this sort of thing. And this is where I think it all started, in Birmingham, of all places. England's second city, also known for being very Islamic and Indian as well.
Beginning in the least likely place in Britain.
It has, but...
Or is it... It actually makes it more likely. Like, perhaps counterintuitively. Like, where the people have been most repressed and downtrodden.
Well, I mean, that makes more sense, really, because, you know, obviously Birmingham, people have been pushed out of the areas that they used to live in, ancestrally speaking. People in Epping and Essex more generally, are much further along than the rest of the country, and that's because a lot of them are exiled from London. They've seen the change that's happened. And this is a natural reaction to that, as well as this being an extension of the protests against migration and the migrant hotels in particular. Here's another one here.
Just the endless decades-long war to suppress any form of patriotism or nationalism.
I would even go further than that and say there's been a concerted effort to attack the native British people, you know, for the benefit of foreigners who do us harm. And this is, in many ways, a rejection of that, and a very sort of, I suppose, polite way of doing it, a way in which no one's going to be strongly disapproving of this and saying this is terrible. Well, They
were. Well, and if they are, those they reveal themselves, don't they?
Exactly, and that's what I'm going to be getting onto. But here they are. This is in Rubery in Birmingham. I don't know. Rubbery. I don't know how that's
probably pronounced. Robbery these days.
Yeah, robbery in Birmingham. But yes, this is outside of a Turkish barber's and a Chinese restaurant, which I think is good optics. And of course, if they object, it makes them look bad, doesn't it?
I like to see. I said, go back to that image real quick, would you?
Of course.
It's interesting. It's nice to note that these are just normal people. Mm-hmm. Like, you couldn't get a more sort of almost cliched image of just normal working class blokes.
Mm-hmm. All that's missing are the cans of lager. They've got bottles of water. So they're right. More sensible, if anything.
I think it puts pay to the lie or just the incorrect take that in some way it must be contrived. In some way it must be some sort of 4D chess move by the deep state or something, or by our enemies. It really is normal people. It really is sort of, dare I say it, a populist grassroots thing. Mm-hmm. That, yeah, they haven't got any leadership. Yeah, they're just doing it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that can happen.
Just like with the hotels. Just started off as one protest, and then everyone around the country was like, hey, why don't we do that as well?
All it takes is a group of mates having a chat about something.
Yeah, at the pub.
The penny to drop.
I'm not saying they're ready for government.
No.
Right? Not arguing that. Mm-hmm. But grassroots people making things actually happen is real. History is littered with examples of that.
I very much agree, yeah. I mean, one need only look at things like the French Revolution. Sure, there was leadership, but there was also lots of organic things that happened. Like the storming of the Bastille wasn't really agitated, really.
It's loads and loads and loads of examples.
But anyway, let's not get bogged down with history, especially French history.
Yeah, quite right.
Oh, okay. So here we can see some roving bands of flag raisers, which is a welcome sight. They're all walking civilly and well behaved. They're not doing anything untoward. They're just walking around.
Terrifying.
I know.
They're qualitatively no difference to stormtroopers.
Men in shorts carrying England flags. How scary.
Terrifying. Can I make a quick point about the Union flag and St. George's flag?
Of course.
Because I'm here for both. But I have seen a fair bit of commentary. Even my good friend Nate off of Mr. H Reviews has made the point, but I've seen it all over Twitter, that a lot of people are like, no, let's do the St. George's flag. I mean, Carl's even made the point.
I agree with that.
And I do agree with it, yeah. If I was doing this stuff and I was in a shop, I'm either going to buy 20 Union flags or 20 St. George's crosses, I certainly go for the St. George's crosses, of course. But I'm here for both of them, really. But it's just an interesting point, I think, in this moment in time, that a lot of people are saying, you know, let's do the England thing first and foremost. Don't worry about Britain at this point, particularly. Well, there's all sorts of, you can argue, there are all sorts of problematic things around the Union flag. I say problematic, just all I mean is that it's, much younger. The Union is much, much younger than the concept of England.
I would argue that it's also a sort of representation of the UK with a Y and two O's, in that it's the symbol of the multicultural, multi-ethnic soup that is trying to be created of the United Kingdom.
Modern
However,
Britain.
We shouldn't allow them to have that. We should fight back against that. But I still think the regional flags have better optics, and people have more of a kinship with that flag than the Union flag, I feel. But I'm not opposed to using the Union flag because half my family is Scottish, half my family is English. So it sort of makes sense that I would be in favour of it, because I'm not going to, I mean, I grew up in England, I'd sooner fly the English flag, but also it feels a little bit dishonest if half of my family is Scottish to then be like, yes, I'm England through and through, you know. So it sort of makes sense to keep the Union together, doesn't it?
Just out of interest, remind me, your DNA, did it actually show, of ancestry or whatever, did it actually show strong Scottish?
It was, the ancestry results were over 50%, but that's only because I've got lots of Celtic from my mum's side as well, because it's from Devon. And it's the closest thing in the British Isles.
But anyway, I find it interesting that our enemies, the enemy Emily Thornberrys of this world, or the Zara Sultanas of this world, they particularly hate the St. George's flag.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's harder for them to, well, maybe
so
not
let's
Thornberry, but,
lead
you know,
into that more then.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the England flag is preferential. But if you've got a Union flag, stick it up.
Sure.
You know? I mean, if you're doing this in Scotland, Northern Ireland, Wales, you know, use your local flag. Yeah. And I encourage it. And you should be proud of your country. You know, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland, there's a lot to be proud of. And,
indeed.
You know, I'm not going to do the thing of insulting your neighbours, because I think actually everyone I've met from all of those countries are lovely and good people, just like you or I, like any Englishman, and we wish you all the best. So, gonna actually be nice for once. And here's some more. This is in London. I believe this was actually in around Tower Hamlets, where all of the
belly of the beast.
It is, yeah. If you're not from Britain, Tower Hamlets is known for being very multicultural. There was a big tower called Grenfell Tower, which burnt down, and pretty much all of the people that were in it were not from Britain originally, let's say that. Obviously, horrible tragedy and everything. So here's another one here. This is the Bell Hotel in Epping. Someone's raised a flag. Look at how much they've had to fortify it as well, this hotel. By the way, it is worth mentioning, there are lots of people profiting from this migrant crisis. They have names. I think it's good to familiarise yourself with them. Like, there's people that have become billionaires out of the migrant crisis in Britain. Mm. Some of our own selling us out.
Lewis Brackpool did a very good segment the other week, naming names, naming organisations.
NGOs, charities.
That's the kind of stuff we need, is make people feel the consequences of their own actions, have their name dragged through the media, have them associated with the crimes of these migrants, because they are facilitating it. But it's great to see this raised there. It's very symbolic. And then here's some more. Just, I think some of those are in Birmingham. Some of them are just around the country. And I even saw Leilani Dowding posting in the countryside here, a bunch of flags being raised. There's loads there.
Oh, yeah,
about six. Six on one small rural street. But to be fair, I see it a lot more these days than you used to in the countryside. It's not that people in the countryside aren't necessarily patriotic. If anything, they've got the most to be patriotic about, because it's sort of God's country, isn't it? But it's a lot more present. I think people are a lot more self-aware. Black Lives Matter and the likes open Pandora's box of racial identitarianism, and that's not going away. It's not closing. People are becoming more and more conscious that we are a people, and our way of life can only exist amongst ourselves. And that's good, in my opinion. I think it's essential to preserving it.
It's interesting you call it the Pandora's box. It's like, yeah, we'll have a new era of racial consciousness, but just for us. non-white people. Mm-hmm. Just for us. And also, on top of that, explicitly not for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not really likely to work. Right? If you zoom out of that, was that likely to really work?
Everyone's projections for the future usually forget that there's going to be a reaction to their own sort of actions. People always assume everything stays static in the future, and it doesn't. People react to stuff. It's funny. It's like this cognitive deficit that some people seem to have. Here's a protest in Southampton against a migrant hotel, and they raised the English flag over the hotel. And it got to the point where the police had to lower it, which is complete optical loss for the police, to be honest.
But it's not like, oh, we've taken it down, all right? Someone's just going to put it back up again. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of all this. Because the action of rebellion is so simple, it's like you can just keep, you know, like what you were saying with the roundabout, mm-hmm. and the flag on the roundabout. All right, well, the council's going to come and, you know, remove it. All right, well, someone's just going to come and paint it again. And on it goes, right? It's just a war of attrition.
And you're exactly right. They are removing the flags, saying they're dangerous. But beforehand, let's actually hammer home why this is important. Because it's got to the point now where raising our own flag is sort of portrayed as a revolutionary act. And were you to go back 20 years ago, this would be absurd, wouldn't it? It'd be unheard of. But now, this seems to be the case, but the optics of it are great. It's just like, well, we stand for our country, we stand for England, we stand for Britain, and anyone who opposes that, because of course they're opposing the right, really, aren't they? But it's become a symbol of the right, and by taking ownership of our national flag, that's basically saying, well, we're, you know, the government in waiting, aren't we?
Pardon me. Flags are the classic symbolic thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I also think, a small point, it's great that the St. George's Cross is so easy.
Mm.
All you need is a bit of red paint, any white surface. It's quite easily done. You don't need multiple colours.
No.
You don't need any...
A good point, Beau.
You don't need any skill. Not that I'm advocating for damage of property or vandalism in any way. But it is easy. It is that, it would be easy, hypothetically, in Minecraft.
Mm.
It would be, assuming, you don't need many colours or any skill.
Mm-hmm. And of course, by putting these things up and forcing the councils and the government and the police to take them down, it's basically forcing an unforced error that's predictable, isn't it? Because then it frames the council or all the police force in question as being against their own country. And it makes it a lot easier to say, well, hang on a minute, look at all the things they've done to you. They're lowering our own flag. How do these people represent us in any way? Mm. It delegitimizes their authority in a way that makes it easier to supplant them. And although I don't think we're anywhere near the point where there's an organic movement on the ground to do such a thing, but it makes, you know, a different cycle of elites more possible, perhaps some that are more favorable to our cause. And I think there are some out there. It's just a matter for Britain to actually start courting more, really. But anyway, so this was the council in Birmingham, which is, by the way, broke for giving out corrupt contracts. There was a case of the Pakistani majority council giving millions of pounds to their Pakistani friends in a taxi service to ferry some disabled children to and from school. And this wasn't just lots, it was like 50. And, you know, it was about 6 million, I think. I can't remember the figure. Unfortunate number.
Aren't they in debt to the tune of billions?
Yes. They're horrendously in debt, which is going to be important.
Gross mismanagement. Difficult to mismanage something that badly, really.
It is, yes. it's almost like they can't build civilization. Here's another one here. Council removed St. George's flags hung by locals to upgrade street lights, apparently. Oh, it's just Birmingham. You know, they're bursting with money. They're just keen to upgrade the street lights. It's like, oh, really? Is that really what's going on? Oh, you've just got to upgrade all the street lights in the same area that they coincidentally put flags up in.
So they can't clear up rubbish for months on end, but they can immediately act on taking St. George's flags down.
Yeah, they finally found the one thing in Birmingham that they will clean up.
Right. All right.
I mean, if I were being, playing devil's advocate here, you know, bin men are different than people who attend to lights.
Sure.
But
fair point.
I also think it's fair to hold the council accountable here. Mm. I think it is a fair case. Here's another one. Labour Council left Palestine flags up while removing Union Jacks. That's in Birmingham again. That's all you need to hear, really, isn't it?
Mm.
Everyone knows that they're doing it because it's our flag and they don't like it because they're foreign or traitors or both. And the fact that they were talking about it being a danger was sort of memed on. Here's Chris Rose talking about how he's survived a near-death experience next to an England flag. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It is highly dangerous. You could choke on that. That could have a baby's eye out.
Mm-hmm. You could climb up that flagpole and start eating it and choke. And then you're up the top of a pole choking and no one's going to be able to reach you.
Or you're just so in awe of the majesty of the flag that you don't look which way you're crossing the road and the car just...
It's obviously ridiculous, isn't it? And here's some people that were covered by, I think this is the Telegraph, isn't it, in Tower Hamlets. Flags raised by patriotism campaigners removed by London Council. So this is, again, the Tower Hamlets Council cracking down on the flag raising. By the way, the charred remains of Grenfell Tower are still there, but they can remove a flag in, seconds flat. Or at least they were still there last time I checked, but I don't go there that often. And there's also some more videos here of the council cutting them down. This is London. You can tell by the red buses in the background. It's ridiculous, really, because it's within hours. But all is not lost. I'm not going to play the audio because they're swearing because this is in Birmingham. say no more.
So I can read it.
So this sort of looks like, if you were to watch the video, oh dear, here comes the council to take them down, doesn't it? But hang on a minute, What's going on here?
We are so back.
He's putting up the flags again. That's quite impressive, really. Someone's gone out of the way to rent a cherry picker just to put up the flags. Legend, well done. I enjoy it. And also, there was this. People going out to roundabouts, mini roundabouts, which are basically pointless. And painting. Everyone drives over them, don't they? Not here, because there's a bloke on them and the police are right there. But when unobserved...
Has he got a license for that bit of red paint?
Funny thing is, the police seem to just drive away. They just have a word with him and then they drive off and he carries on. It's like, I don't know what they were doing, but I'm not complaining. Obviously, this is more difficult to remove, but it doesn't mean that they didn't try. Here's Birmingham Council again, able to fix stuff somehow. It's funny that, isn't it? It's funny how things work when it's a symbol of our country, but when it's bins or, you know, Palestine flags or other things, there's some sort of exception. It's almost like they're enemies of British people. It's almost like that, isn't it?
It is also just remarkable that they are, just to really spell it out, they are more offended by the flag of England than they are living with rubbish just mounting up outside their own houses.
Well, it represents their culture. That's why.
I know.
It's a taste of home.
More and more squalor.
Stinky rubbish everywhere.
It's just...
Yeah, well, it's a symbol of civilization and order, the flag, and that's basically antithetical to their way of life. But people have been joking that there is a way to get the council to do stuff, is to paint the English flag in the potholes.
I never even thought of that. That's brilliant.
And they'll fill them in for you. So if you've got potholes, why not make them patriotic and maybe they'll get filled in and you can have some smooth roads? It won't be like we're going through Belgium, which I'm pretty sure hasn't paved their roads since 1917. It's so bumpy. It's like a suspension test for an entire country. Yeah, we can't allow our roads to get as bad as Belgium. This is my call out to all the local councils across the country. But lots of people have had stuff to say about this, and it's been surprisingly muted from the left. And surprisingly, people have recognised the importance of this. This is Paul Embury, who, by the way, has been a member of the Labour Party since 1994, I think it's said on his website. And he says something which I agree with entirely. He says, "I'll say again, I've never particularly been a flag waver, but it's pretty obvious why the Operation Raise the Colours campaign has broken out and is spreading. Ordinary Britons are angered by the broken immigration and asylum system, but they have also had enough of asymmetrical multiculturalism, the phenomenon driven by the liberal elites, which dictates that minority nationalities and cultures must always be enthusiastically celebrated while the majority culture must be downplayed. It is never said explicitly, of course, but this has been the effect of public policy over the past couple of decades or so, and now it has resulted in major pushback by those who belong to the major nationality and culture. Their patience has snapped. Quelled surprise." This is actually spot on. I thought this was great.
Very well said.
And he's a trade unionist, been associated with the Labour Party for a very long time. He's coming out with some sound commentary. I think he was pro-Brexit.
He was, yeah.
And also, he did write this book as well, Despise Why the Modern Left Loathes the Working Class. So he's not necessarily typical
of just
ended
your
average...
loathes the working.
That's true. But he's not necessarily typical, but it suggests that this is a message that could resonate with the left, right? He's still of the left. He still describes himself as such. Sorry, Bill, you were going to say
I quite like the phrase, pardon me, asymmetrical multiculturalism. Mm-hmm. That's quite nice. I must have heard it before, but it's jogged my memory. It's a good one. Mm-hmm. It's nice and pithy. I feel like this guy, I don't really know him at all, but is he a working class fella?
He was a firefighter and he represented a firefighters union.
Right, okay.
So he's doing an actual proper good beneficial job for the
it
world.
Seems like I might be completely wrong. Like I said, I don't really know anything about this guy. But it sounds like he's perhaps of the older left, where they thought that the Labour Party was like a real Labour movement. It had the best interests of the working class, the proletariat, whatever commie word you want to use. and now finds himself, like everyone else, just left behind by them, mm-hmm. just in the a bucket of deplorables, well, like everyone else.
He says so in this book, doesn't he, that it's about a metropolitan middle-class liberal right. elite living in London. Mm. And right. it's true. Everyone can recognise it. That's what's going on. They're isolated from the consequences of their own actions because they live in, you know, different areas to where all the suffering's going on. Here's Matt Goodwin with one of his signature essays. Of course, he's going to react that way. Enough of that. read it if you like, of course. They are interesting. I'll give him that, if you've got the time. This is interesting as well. All 12 reform councils have made a pledge not to remove the flags if they're raised, which I think is actually quite a good move. And Nigel yeah. Farage has said, union flags and the Cross of St. George should and will fly across the country. Reform UK will never shy away from celebrating our nation. So for once, Reform is actually doing something optically good. So well done. And obviously, lots of the grassroots campaigners are brilliant. And, you know,
this is true.
All of our objections are usually for the way things are led and not by the people on the ground who make it all work. So well done to you all.
And that's good. That's good from Nigel. Stop clocks right a couple of times a day. So no, I enjoy that. That's good. Nice to hear that.
Mm-hmm. And now for something that I've included just specifically to annoy Bo, because I know how much you appreciate her contributions. Here she is talking about the lads in Birmingham who you are so complimentary of.
What's her take?
Going around raising flags in what's apparently called Operation Raise the Colours, intentionally in front of Turkish barbers and a Chinese takeaway where they probably got a fresh trim and a Chinese before heading home. Thick AF. It's worth pointing out that two of the men are bald. so I don't think they're going to need a trim, maybe a beard trim. But this is just trying to find exception to it, isn't it? Because...
yeah.
You know, maybe they asked the two businesses for permission first. We don't know. You know, maybe they have no exception to it. Maybe they don't mind.
It's all part of Kerr's grift, isn't it? To have faux outrage at anything like this. You remember her exchange with Thomas the Winner Skinner on GB News?
Do, yeah.
Remember that? Mm-hmm. It was like he dared bring out, I can't remember if he brought out the Union flag or St. George's, but yeah, she like pretended to be outraged at that. The other thing I've noticed quite often that people on the other side of the aisle to us, they fall back on the criticism that it's dumb, that you're thick, that if you've got any sense of patriotism or any sense that you don't want to be replaced in your own ancestral homeland, that you're thick. You see it all the time.
Haven't we moved beyond patriotism now?
You're so dumb.
Yeah, backwards.
Like, you don't understand something. Mm. You must be thick. It's like, really? For a start, that's water off a duck's back. It's like, mm-hmm. well, we're not, so, okay. But like, that's the best you've got? Mm-hmm. That's your final line of defence, that you're just thick.
We've seen their understanding okay. of economics. We don't need to take it from them.
Yeah, it's a bit rich coming from Ms. Kerr, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Quite ironic.
And then coming to the defence of England was our formerly very own John Wong, former producer of Lotus Eaters.
Long Wong Silver.
That's the one, yes, the pirate himself. hi, former Chinese takeaway owner and over 30-year family history in the Chinese food industry here. It's okay to eat Chinese and love your country. Which is a fair sentiment, actually. Cheers, John.
Yeah.
And then Narinda was saying, no one didn't say it wasn't. I don't know what that means, but there are obvious reasons for hoisting in front of a Turkish barbers and Chinese. She's trying to suggest that they're agitating on purpose, which John has a very good rebuttal to. The notion that raising the Union flag outside immigrant-owned shops is intimidating or conducive to a conflict of ethnic interest necessitates the presupposition that those shops are foreign territory. Ergo, this reveals your implicit view that immigration is but an invasion.
Burn.
Well done, John. This is good.
Yeah.
Smoked. It's just nonsense. The idea, I had a chicken fried rice and some prawn crackers, so now I have to advocate for the abolition of England. I just have to accept every other, you know, foreigner on the planet here. Well,
it's not as if you feed, you know, I don't know, a Bengali a roast dinner and all of a sudden they become just as you and you or I.
Mm.
And they're just as English. No, it doesn't work that way. The ethnicity is still important, but also, you know, you can eat food and still be of your culture and still be a patriot. It doesn't really matter. It's a non-argument.
The food thing is weird, isn't it? It's like if you eat a bit of beef Wellington, your head is immediately filled with the campaigns of the Duke of Wellington.
It's true, but no. Only 0.1%. It just gives you an ever so slight nudge.
If you have a little bit of egg fried rice, suddenly you are from Wuhan. What? It doesn't make any sense. Yeah. What did she say there? I think you deep things too much. What?
What?
It's like he fried her brain so much that even her loose... It's not her first language, says Samson. But he...
Scroll up a little to her first thing. The first thing she said, sorry.
Oh, in response, yeah.
No one didn't say it wasn't. Yeah. So someone did say it was.
Be such a patriot that the English language comprehension of the people against us becomes scrambled and they can't even argue against
Make
us.
Make them unfathomable.
And then the final one I wanted to mention in terms of commentary was the sort of thing that I would expect people of my parents' generation to say. England's politics are becoming like Northern Ireland's. Flags signal which groups in the majority locally. Voters are expected to back their side. Yes. That's not unfair. This is nothing to celebrate. Sectarian politics encourages, at best, complacency and corruption, and at worst, civil strife. And I will say in response to this what I actually said, if it's still there, in response. I think
there
it
you
is.
Are. There you are. You've just oh, yeah. go up.
I can't. Oh, yeah, there I forgot. Are. I changed my profile picture, so I don't recognise myself. In ordinary times, I would agree completely. However, English identitarianism is more of an immune system response to the treatment of the native inhabitants as second-class citizens in our own country. Both economically and legally, there are cases of unfairness. Which, you know, I respect Lord Hannon. He can be good on many things. So I wanted to be nice about it. But this was the reply that was by far the most popular. And so, not to pat my... Well, there were... also other people saying the same thing, but the sentiment was pretty clear that people don't much care for warnings about sectarianism anymore because it's gone too far, and it has. It's Pandora's box has been opened and you can't close it again now. Racial consciousness has been opened and the English have learnt that to preserve our people we've got to be, you know, unrepentantly ourselves. And by flying our flag, that's at least a start, and it reveals our enemies. And that's great.
Scroll up to what you said again for us. Sectarian politics encourages... he's worried about sectarianism. Well, yeah, well, you foisted it on us. Well, not him, personally. Mm-hmm. It's been foisted on us asymmetrically for decades, though.
It's very true, yeah.
Yes, you've invited it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. We're not just doing this for like, out of nowhere.
We just lie down and take it.
Out of clear blue sky for no reason.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a phrase, if you mess with the bull, you get the horns, right? Yeah. And the bull has been very patient, but it's time for the horns, isn't it? That's what's happening. People are fed up of having to put up with being treated like this in our own country, nonetheless. Mm. And I want to draw attention to this. Mm. This is an initiative that is just documenting where people are raising flags and also accepting donations to help flag York specifically. And I imagine if this takes off, it'll be across the country. So if you like this notion... There are people trying to spread it, and they've got a link to their website there, flagforceuk.com, and they have a little website where they show where people are raising flags. Obviously, Birmingham's there. Mm. I don't know where that is. You're from up north, you'll probably know.
I think that's York.
Oh, of course, yeah. Too far for me to know. So, yeah, I wanted to draw attention to this because I think it's important. I think it's not just a symbolic victory because it's forcing errors, it's putting pressure on the current ruling elites to make mistakes. And if they make mistakes, it weakens them and it makes their replacement all the easier. And this is a good thing and we should be celebrating.
Indeed. Do you want me to read through the Rumble rants for you?
Of course.
Okay. Engage View says, in both Britain, the throne will issue a decree to the local councils. The St. George's flag will hang from the lampposts. Right, okay. <yeah. laughs> I'll tell you.
P- people can guess what that was going
to
be.
You had me in the first half engaged through. I thought I was going to be able to read it all. Habsification says, woke ideology won, but the second and third order consequences is something these lot did not expect. But they were warned, ethnic and religious identity has been awakened. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And once again, habsification. It costs more to take the flag down than it does putting it up. The flags barely cost more than my rumble ramp. Yeah, and so they can just keep getting put up.
They are very cheap, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Very, very cheap. One more flag. Very, very cheap.
Never thought I'd hear
materially
quoting an Indian.
Materially, very, very cheap, but spiritually invaluable.
Right.
All right.
Can I have a mouse?
Go on, then.
Thank I have a no mouse and I must scream.
Okay. So, the big thing, the main thing that's in the news cycle today is the Zelensky has gone back to the White House.
Mm.
So, we feel like we have to cover it.
I hope he's practiced his pleases and thank yous.
Oh, yeah. There was a, quote, flurry of thank yous when the cameras went on. Mm. In the Oval Office, apparently he said thank you like six times in almost.
And he wore a blazer this time.
Yeah, although not a tie.
Mm.
He'd still fail to wear a tie.
Oh well, we'll get there.
It's not difficult, dude. Like, get a tie. You're a president. You're a head of state, aren't you?
Giving you
get a tie.
Enough money, you can afford one.
Yeah, yeah.
£3 tie.
Aren't your family extremely rich now? Somehow, you could probably afford a couple of ties. Yeah, and take your coat off. You're in the He's wearing. He's wearing a shirt with the top button done up, no tie, and a coat in the Oval Office. Like,
anyway,
some of the angles are saying, like, look at the drip. Oh, he's so well turned out this time. Oh, he looks so great. No, he doesn't. He's like an idiot. All right. Anyway, enough of the ad hominem. People could probably criticise my tie and shirt combo if they tried. All right. So. But it was so. Even though we're covering it because it's a big, it's in the news cycle at the moment. It's a bit of a nothing burger. If you remember last week in Alaska, Putin and Trump met. You remember that, and all the headlines out of that was that there's like some sort of reasonably big push forward that Putin, like Trump, went there hoping to sort of start to get some sort of ceasefire agreement. And that Putin said, no, let's move past that. Let's just go to a full-blown peace deal. Because Putin's got really what he wants. In other words, he's occupying all the land he wants, basically.
Mm.
There's no realistic battlefield possibility of it being taken off of him. So he's basically achieved his war aims, it seems. I mean, I'm not privy to the thinking of the Kremlin war planners, but it looks that way. So he's basically got what he wants. So he's ready for... He's ready for a peace. So let's, and so the headlines coming out of that Alaska summit was that, oh, right, okay, we can get a peace deal going. That sounds good. So Trump, off the back of that, is like, right, get Vladimir back in DC ASAP and let's do a deal, the art of the deal, let's do it. The problem is, sort of obviously with all of that, is that Trump and Putin can sort of agree whatever they want. If the Ukrainians don't agree to it, then and there isn't a full-blown 100% military, Russian military success, like a full-blown surrender with no conditions, then they still need the Ukrainians to be on board with whatever deal they've decided amongst themselves. So it's all very well Trump and Putin agreeing something, but...
And as far as I know, the European powers are still, you know, just giving unconditional support to Ukraine. So he's not allyless, which gives him a reason to keep going.
I would also suggest that a lot of the Western support for Ukraine isn't for some special love for Ukraine.
Of course.
Down. I think it's all just to weaken Russia, isn't it? And it's effectively a proxy war.
Mm.
So most of the countries supporting Ukraine... they may care about the well-being of the Ukrainian people, perhaps. I'm not going to go so far as to say that. But they're more interested in harming Russia than helping Ukraine.
Mm.
And I think that part of the reason, you know, there's no European anger at Trump trying to negotiate a peace deal and why the Americans are keen is that both Russia and, you know, the West more generally, except Ukraine, of course, have sort of got what they wanted. Russia has put a lot more money and lives and military technology into the conflict than they expected. And I'm getting to the point now where I think they're satisfied with how much harm they've done to Russia, and they're okay to sue for peace. But the Ukrainians, I think Zelensky's had a line where he's been pretty much unbending on ceding territory to the Russians, and I don't know whether he'll be able to do that. It would be very impressive if he does, but I don't think it's very likely, given that the Russians have been militarily successful and they're in a position to take it, basically. Mm. You know, it's like the Melian dialogues of ancient Greece, isn't it? You know, the strong do what they can and the weak do what they must. Mm. That's the way the world works, unfortunately, and although morality is with keeping your own territory, I don't think it's actually going to play out that way.
Mm. I don't know if I'm getting to something that you're going to cover, but I saw Zelensky saying that I can't cede the territory because it's written in our constitution.
Mm.
That's true as well. Yeah.
It's like, but what is a piece of paper in this respect? What defense is that when you've already lost a huge portion of it?
So just endless war then?
Yeah.
You're going to feed in even people with like Down syndrome. Do you see that?
Yeah.
Old men and really young men and even people with learning difficulties. Are you just going to you're just gonna waste all your men folk? Is that what you... Is that the plan then? I don't know.
Then when the war is over, it's not really over either, because, of course, the designs that have been made for Ukraine are horrifying. Mm. You know, you've got BlackRock and the like carving up parts, designs for mass migration to replace the lost men. Who knows what horrors Ukraine's going to face after the war as well as during.
Mm. I think you're quite right to say that from the European point of view, or the, let's say maybe the NATO leadership point of view, they're much more interested than trying to damage Russia strategically than caring about the Ukrainian soldier's death. They've been very blasé about that.
Well, yeah,
haven't they?
On both sides, it's basically generations of young men that have been conscripted and sent to die in something that, were they given the choice, I don't think they would be there.
Mm.
You know, it's... Yeah. You lose a generation of young men for what?
Story as old as time.
It is, yeah.
Classic, going back to Thucydides. It's as old as time. But also, just to interrupt myself, perhaps consider buying Islander magazine from our website. It's $14.99 plus postage and packaging. And issue 4, it's really good. It's got some great... who are some of the people that are writing in it this time?
Morgoth, Dutton, Pharaoh.
Dutton, Mr. Cole Benjamin.
Luca Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
You're always very modest. You never mention you've written.
Sometimes.
Dave Green. So, yeah. And Luca, yeah. I'll write one next time, I think. I was in the first one and haven't been in it
twice.
Since. I think I will be in the next one. Okay, yeah, consider buying that. Because we do only print... Cole's very strict on this. There's one print run, and that's it.
And if you don't get it and then you regret it later, you'll be paying £400 on eBay for
the aftermarket.
Yeah.
I have heard rumours that, yeah, on eBay they're going for quite a lot. So, yeah.
Don't buy them and sell them on there. That's bad form.
No, don't do that.
Get them for first time for the $14.99. Okay, so back to Zelensky and Russia and Putin. So Trump sort of summons Zelensky back to the White House. And if you remember a few months back when he was ambushed, remember that? When J.D. Vance ambushed him.
Mm.
That was a little bit embarrassing from both sides.
It was a little bit, wasn't it? It's not very statesmanlike.
Yeah. I get that they were playing to their base, as in Trump and J.D. Vance, and a lot of what they were saying was actually true, but it was just the manner in which they were saying it didn't look good. And sometimes optics are important in this thing. Sometimes, you know, saying the truth isn't necessarily all that you need to do. And I feel like they could have dealt with it better, as well as Zelensky obviously being sort of rude and entitled, pretty much. But then why shouldn't he be? He's basically been given infinite free money. So he's sort of come to expect it now, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it was a bit unstatesmanlike, but I also thought it was quite funny.
It made me laugh.
Yeah,
it's humorous.
To pull him down a peg or two, but asking him to say thank you. I mean, it's a bit like a small child. What do you say? What's the magic word? You know, it's a bit like that.
Say please.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this time it seems like everyone that's on the as long as it takes train, just endless support for Ukraine, they feel like they didn't want him to get ambushed again. And so loads of the European leaders all turned up And it's quite rare, actually, to have that many people. There's an image here to have, you know, what have we got? Italy, the EU, Germany, France, NATO, Zelensky himself, the Dutch.
Yeah. The Dutch. Well, he's EU. He doesn't represent the Dutch anymore.
Oh, does he not?
No. Like how Keir Starmer's not there.
Is Starmer not there? Yeah.
He might be in the back there. I think I recognise his grey quiff behind.
Is it just behind Vance?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've
might
got
be him.
All the big hitters. Rubio's there, Bondi, I think. It's a room of power. But the Donald, just out of shot. Can imagine he would fire them if he could. But the body language is very interesting. Everyone's just like, oh. I mean, it's modish at the moment to say, isn't it, that the American Empire is over, it's on the wane, they're done, all that sort of thing. Well, no, the reality is that they're the most powerful country in the world in a couple of key metrics, in terms of their navy, still obviously a massive nuclear arsenal, their economy, although massively in debt, is still a behemoth. Mm. Trump is still the most, arguably, the most powerful man in the world, or whoever is president of the United States.
And certainly over Europe.
Yeah, yeah. Like the Dutch prime minister, or not Dutch, let's say, the Italian prime minister. I mean, in terms of sheer power, the ability to move things in the world, it's night and day between the US president and the leader of Italy. Right. And this shows.
Three of us as well.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Oh, God, yeah, absolutely. No, it's absolutely the case. There's a number of pictures actually, aren't there? One or two, I think, from almost iconic images from Trump's first presidency, where it's like Angela Merkel, or everyone like leaning over Trump, trying to sort of berate
him. Oh, yes.
And he's just like, I'm not having any of it. So I don't need to do anything you guys say at all. That is one thing I think is good about the MAGA movement, from an American point of view, that they're aware of their own power, fully aware of it. Like Steve Bannon. Like, if you hate America, it must be really frustrating to listen to Steve Bannon being aware of their own power. But from their point of view, I mean, good on them. I'm for nationalists all around the country, all around the world, in their own country.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm for Indian nationalism in India, right? I'm for MAGA in the United States, and on and on and on. You get it. Okay, but it's interesting to see all like the Poe faces. But what it boils down to, ultimately, is that if the Ukrainians, Zelensky, sort of refuses to accept any sort of raft of conditions that Trump and Putin have come to, if he refuses to do it, then the conflict will just go on interminably, won't it?
Well, there is a bargaining chip that America and the European powers can have over him, that unless you move a bit more our way, we're going to stop supporting you as much. Mm. Which is, you know, he's entirely... The Ukrainian resistance would have been over if it wasn't for lots of the Western support. Mm. And so he is dependent on them, and the situation could get worse, and they could hold that over him as like, listen, you've got to be realistic here. It doesn't matter what the Constitution says. Find a way around it, vote around it, do something, but you've got to end this.
Mm. That does seem like a final sticking point, which... it can't be the final sticking point, that the war will have to go on endlessly because the office of president of Ukraine cannot ever concede territory. Well, then that just hard bakes in a forever war then, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Or unconditional surrender.
I mean, we'll get accused, as I have been and a lot of seasons have been for, of being Kremlin stooges. But Ukraine have to accept they've lost territory.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to accept it. It's a fait accompli. It has happened. It's a battlefield reality. Mm. The political will coming out of Moscow is that they're not going to give it back. They're not going to give Crimea back. Right? They're not going to give big chunks of the Donbass back. That seems like that just will not happen.
It's not even like I'm happy about it either, because it would be more to my personal benefit that some of that land, which, you know, Ukraine, breadbasket of Europe, was in Ukraine's hands. It's more likely to benefit me than it would in Russian hands, which, you know, given everything that's happened, isn't going to be of any benefit to me. So it's not that I'm even happy about it, but I do agree that it seems like an inevitability, really.
Oh, yeah, if I could wave a magic wand and we'll go back to sort of 2013 or 2012 and that border, everyone completely agrees and there's 100% peace from both sides.
And no one
I would wave that wand. Yeah, of course, yeah. But that's not where we are. That's not reality now. That's not the battlefield reality. Okay, so what was agreed yesterday with Zelensky and by proxy a lot of the European leaders? Very little. Very little. The takeaway points were that there might be a meeting with Putin and Zelensky. So probably not. I mean, the Russians even said, what was it? It was like the most lukewarm thing they could have possibly said. They said that it might be worthwhile to explore the possibility of raising the levels of representatives. That's a diplomatic way of saying, nah, probably not.
Yeah, nothing forthcoming in that.
Yeah. On that side of things, apparently it's the case that it really is the Russians saying no to that. Zelensky is calculated a long time ago that he can say, I'm ready to meet Putin, I'm ready, but he knows because they're going to say no. So he looks like he's the one gunning for peace, but the Russians are just not really interested in that. They hold nearly all the cards, militarily speaking, which is the bottom line, isn't it? Which is the bottom line. So a Putin Zelensky meeting on the cards, question mark. Yeah, not really. That the Europeans push back against Trump's idea of a ceasefire. For some reason, the Europeans and particularly the Germans were like, no, we must have a ceasefire first.
We must have an armistice. They will play football.
I mean, if the Ukrainians, and it doesn't look likely, but if the Ukrainians just said, okay, we're ready to agree to essentially whatever Putin wants, then they don't, doesn't have to be a ceasefire first. Just get it done. Just get a peace deal done. All right, the third thing is that Trump hints at security guarantees for the Ukrainians, that if and when there was a ceasefire and or peace, that he would then, the United States would then at least guarantee their further safety. Apparently Putin agreed to most of that, or in fact all of that at the Alaska thing. So again, the ball's back in Ukraine's court on that.
Well,
but it's not
also
really anything. It's just sort of a talking point. It's nothing concrete, is it?
Putin would agree to that, though, because it's a guarantee that nothing is going to escalate again. And if he's trying to consolidate his basically territory that he's won, you don't want things to be kicking off again and interrupting that, do you? You sort of want there to be amicable peace. Amicable, you know, as amicable as it can be.
And the fourth most important takeaway point, the things that have happened at this important meeting, is that Zelensky was nice, was charming.
Oh.
And just look at the drip. He definitely doesn't look like a cobbled together Eastern European gangster.
He looks definitely like he's going to a funeral.
Yeah.
What's up with all of the black?
And that is one of the four key takeaways.
Yeah.
From the headline, I see.
Yeah. So, okay. The last thing to say is that, again, the maps tell the real story. The Ukrainians are not capable, it doesn't seem like, and from all the sort of the military analysts that you can listen to, they're not in a position to launch any sort of offensive that's realistically going to take back these big chunks of land. You know, they had their shot at a big summer offensive, a couple of summers ago, and it bogged down immediately and got nowhere. The Russians are dug in like an Alabama tick. It's going to be difficult to get them out. It's not going to happen.
Well, the lines have been sort of around these sorts of boundaries or advancing against the Ukrainians for years now, haven't they?
Right, right. Yeah. One of the things that came out of that Alaska meeting was some of these small pockets, relatively small pockets of land up here that Putin's prepared to give away some other chunks of land if he can have these sort of strategically, or I guess even maybe even tactically important areas, small areas. But yeah, these main areas here are what doesn't seem like he's going to let go. He doesn't have to. He's under no real pressure to let them go. The Ukrainian military forces, it seems, despite everything, all the materiel and money that's been given to them, are incapable of doing it. That's just the reality there on that. So I suppose the final thing to say, one of the final things to say, is that if and when a peace deal is made, will that actually mean the end of fighting, the end of like gunplay, the end of sort of mortar exchanges and stuff, because there's different, every war is almost a unique thing, and some, when the two sides, the two governments sign an armistice or have a war or have a peace deal, both sides, their professional militaries, their regulars, do just stop. But then there's all sorts of other wars where the governments or the leaders can say we've come to a peace and things don't stop. If you look at like interminable wars in the West Bank or Gaza, you know, a government
more
can say
in the Middle East than perhaps in Europe, isn't it?
Like Yasser Arafat can say we've reached a deal, and the paramilitaries on the ground are like, yeah, cool, good one, and they keep going. I fear that something like that, at least on a relatively small scale, may happen here, because there's lots of like ultra-Ukrainian or Ukrainian ultras in that part of the country, which may not give in, even if Zelensky did sign a deal. Even if Zelensky did sign a peace deal, would it really mean the end of violence?
That might be why he's so keen not to end it here and now, isn't it? That if he did, he wouldn't have the ability to enforce it.
Maybe. It's a messy one. As far as wars go, it does seem sort of on the slightly messier end of the scale. But okay, I suppose, watch your space. That was just the latest step in the ongoing saga of Ukraine.
Biggest news, Zelensky wore a jacket.
The biggest news.
All right, just one from Havification says, Putin needs access to the Black Sea, which leads to the Med, treat for shipping lanes and military.
It's sort of the whole point of the Crimea, is that it's there's deep water harbours there and stuff for them.
Why we fought the Crimean War in and won it in 1856, isn't it? Is that the Russians wanted a warm water port that didn't freeze over in the winter.
Yeah, well, there's a reason why the Ottomans, the Russians, and even the British in the 19th century coveted the Crimea. Yeah,
because we gave it away to the Ottomans, who we later fought, which was stupid.
Yeah.
Well, it was all for the great game. It was all for the great game. Anyway, well, ladies and gentlemen, as we know now, since October the 7th, it's been nearly 2 years at this point, and of course the conflict and the violence and the bloodshed in Gaza is obviously still ongoing. And with any of these things, with a lot of war and a lot of chaos, comes a lot of refugees as well. And this has been something that a lot of people have been very vocal about since the beginning, that obviously whenever there's war in the Middle East, it really invariably only means one thing for Europe.
It means we've got to pick up the slack for some reason. I don't know why it's our problem, why in any way we're involved, and it's basically because we're a weak touch that gets our humanity and good feeling exploited by people that are far more cynical than that.
Absolutely. But before we talk about everything else to do with the refugees, I just want to tell you that we've obviously got Islander issue 4 out, many wonderful essays in here. It's $14.99 on the website, and you'll really, really enjoy it. So the other thing as well, of course, is that there is, exactly as you say, Josh, we're a weak touch, right? And the sort of like liberal, like compassion and empathy above all things, not for our own people, of course.
No,
compassion and empathy for everyone else in the world reigns supreme. And so, obviously, as you have here, this was back in June. Dozens of MPs are calling on Starmer to urgently establish a Ukraine-style visa for the Gazans to come over to Britain. And it feels like it's only a matter of time. Is really the point of all of this, right? Mm-hmm. The pressure is there. It comes from all the NGOs, all the refugee charities, basically everyone in Parliament with this worldview.
Or they'll just do it, slap a D notice on it, and tell you about it 2 years later. Mm. That's a classic.
Well, yeah, all that as well.
Afghan thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where loads of Afghans magically just appear in Britain. And it's like, oh, okay, thanks.
Thousands of them. Thousands of them.
You sound Zulu.
Yeah. But as Sam points out here, and to be clear, we don't want that chain migration. It's like when you look at Denmark, it took in 321 Palestinians, 71 received prison sentences in the 27 years afterwards, and by 2011, 200 of working age were on benefits, right? And so this is the point. It always, the rhetoric always begins with, well, it's just temporary refuge, and then it becomes indefinite refuge, and then it becomes citizenship, and then it becomes, oh, well, we've got families as well that we need to bring.
They've got uncles and aunties.
Mm. So do I. Yeah, it doesn't mean, you know, I move somewhere, I take them with me, does it? Which... Also, it doesn't matter which side of the conflict the refugees are coming from. I just don't want them here. No.
Mm. Yeah.
Anyone that comes from a desert, forget about it. No chance.
And from a group of people that the Egyptians and the Jordanians and the Saudis refuse, essentially, to have anything to do with.
Well, they know what happened in Lebanon, don't they?
So these people are not the best people, let's just put it that way. Why should they come here, of all places? Of all places, why?
Well, they may not be going to that's the wrong one. I don't want anything to do with
Mali that. Wins the 2025 Independence Cup. Yes.
Thank you. Indonesia, thank you, Samson. Indonesia affirms no negotiations with Israel on Gaza residents' evacuation.
All right.
So the Israeli government seems to have been putting out feelers across many, many nations, saying, because they want Gaza, of course, they want the territory, they want to clear out Hamas and all the rest of it that we've been talking about for 2 years now. But this leaves them, well, where are the millions and millions of people going to go? Where, you know, there's a lot of people. And so Indonesia, maybe, well, the Indonesian government denied this, but then so did the South Sudanese. And I keep hearing lots of things from various different countries saying, oh, there's been no talk of it whatsoever. But somehow these stories are coming from somewhere. And there's many videos that you can check out online of Netanyahu just explaining the fact that, yeah, of course we're in conversation with foreign countries about where all the Gazans can go to, where all the Palestinians can go to. So they're going to get, it's not going to be Israel, of course. Mm. You know, that whole, when we get, oh, well, you have to accept all these refugees because you bomb their country, right? Well, Israel's the one bombing, but they're not accepting all of the refugees. It's funny how that works. You don't actually have to do that, funnily enough.
The obvious place to send them, assuming Egypt will just refuse, Jordan will just refuse, is then the West Bank. But that's no good for Israel either, is it?
No,
they want rid of them for good.
I mean, the obvious thing to do is to adhere to the agreement of the Israeli settlement that we gave them in the first place and not disturb them at all. Aren't they breaking our agreement? So the last place it should be is Britain, because we insisted upon them staying there. The Israelis have broken their word, and as far as I'm concerned, I'd sooner, you know, take action against Israel than accept these refugees. Mm. Not, wouldn't even have to think about it.
Yeah, it'd be an absolute no-brainer that no, and if you keep putting pressure on us, Israel, we'll shut your embassy or something. No, it's a hard no, thank you very much, from me.
Well, they've explicitly gone against our agreement that we had, right?
Plus, also, from the Palestinians' point of view, from Hamas's point of view, it's like, you already displaced us. I hate to play devil's advocate on their behalf, but you already displaced us from our villages that are now in Israel. And so now you want to send us to Britain or Indonesia. It's like, no, that's the opposite of our ultimate goal. So, yeah, it just seems that Israel are hell-bent on clearing the Gaza Strip of all the people there, regardless of anything, regardless of what damage or disruption it causes to the entire world.
Mm. But, of course, not every country in the world is foolish enough to take them.
Right.
And this is, you know, you can see this is an article from over a year ago, mm-hmm. with Belgium has the most Palestinian asylum seekers in the EU. It says since
tiny little Belgium. Belgium's tiny.
Since March, Palestinians have been the largest group of asylum seekers in Belgium, according to a commission. In June of 2024, 301 Palestinians applied for asylum in Belgium, and in March this year, Palestinians became the largest group of the applicants. But the guy goes on to say, moreover, about half of the Palestinian asylum seekers have already received international protection in other EU countries, and this places an additional burden on them. So, of course, Brussels are going to want to divvy them up in the other European countries, right?
Oh, they didn't immediately start loving cheese and become big Poirot fans. Oh, that's a surprise.
They do have excellent chocolate there, though.
Yeah. But that was 2024, so let's go to this year, shall we? This was just last month. Knife attack in the 18th of Paris, a Palestinian arrested. Both the man stabbed and the man arrested were Palestinians. So, shape of things to come, I suppose. But then you had this. The French court grants refugee status to Gazans outside of the United Nations mandate for the first time. And it goes on to say that they've ruled that Palestinian nationals from Gaza who are not under the United Nations protection may be granted refugee status under the 1951 Geneva Convention, citing the conduct of Israeli military operations in the enclave.
Someone got the memo from Bibi. We're clearing them out. Do whatever you got to do. Say whatever you got to do. They're getting cleared out.
This is the point. It doesn't matter whether you're in the convention or you're outside of the convention, there are enough lawyers working for these people, there are enough do-gooders, and just enemies of European peoples, right? Mm-hmm. That it is coming. In our current state, they are coming.
If Jess Phillips has got anything to say about it, yeah, though.
We're not the world's solution to the problems, you know, and you've rejected colonialism across the world, so, you know, your problems are your own. Get on with it. It's not nothing to do with us. You know, Israel, Palestine, I don't really care. It's nothing to do with me.
It's not our war.
No, I've got my own problems at home, fighting for my own people. And, you know, I understand it must be difficult for many of the Palestinians that, you know, there was an agreement which the Israelis broke. But at the same time, it's not our problem to solve, is it? We're not that important in that region anymore.
No, and what's more, you always get it trotted out by them, don't you? It's like, oh, well, Britain has a long history, proud history of helping refugees. It's like, yeah, we did.
And then we sent it back as well.
But right up until you kind of just, you know, took the biscuit with, and by importing millions and millions of people, right, changing our homeland, putting us in this existential place of threat. Well, we've got other priorities now. Yeah, we could take 30,000 Huguenots at one time, but those days are behind us, right? This is where we are now. This is how things are. And we're not having, like, the one time you want to pry the heritage of Britain, the heritage of England. It's like, it's to further dismantle us and put us under threat, right? That's all it is. All it is. The French granted refugee status. That didn't last long. France halts all evacuations from Gaza over alleged anti-Semitic reposts by a Palestinian student who came to France.
That seems like a pretty tenuous excuse, but it's a good way of getting out of it, I guess.
Right. Well, it just goes back to that point, doesn't it? It's like, well, what stopped it? Well, it wasn't the crime.
Oh, no.
It wasn't the crime happening on the streets. It was, shockingly, a Palestinian not having a very positive view of Israel.
I think that's to be expected.
Yeah, exactly.
To be honest.
Also, you know, it doesn't detail what the nature of the post was, so it's such a loose term, it could be anything.
It's mad to watch sort of wokest virtue signalers being bashed from pillar to post. It's like, oh, the virtue-signalling correct thing to do is to take in Gazans. Oh, no, but they are anti-Semitic, though, also, but just vacillating. Like,
I think
just do what's in the best interest of your people. That's not that hard.
I think they squared that circle by sort of embracing some degree of anti-Semitism, haven't they, in that they just don't care about it anymore. Mm. Like, you look at the US college campuses, and to be honest, it was heavily handedly dealt with by Trump, but there we go. What happened to free speech there, eh?
But it's becoming, obviously, an ever more intractable problem, because now you have European countries just swelling demographically with people from the Middle East, who obviously have huge ethno-religious loyalty to the Gazans.
What? They might have an in-group preference of their own that they bring with them.
What? But then also, because of the post-war world, you have this paranoia, even up to the elites, right, about just anything slightly critical of Israel. It's like, we can't have that, or if we're not gunning for them, then... So you've got this thing where these two things are just creating conflict every single time they come, and it's on our soil.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on our soil, in our continent, for a group of people who have different homelands, other homelands.
Yeah, importing foreign conflicts is just not our business.
No.
It's annoying enough when India and Pakistan playing cricket because we see it on the street.
Mm. You can see Germany here having to figure out this conundrum as well, conflicted over the project to rescue children from Gaza. So, and again, it's always, and I hate this because it makes me feel like a dick, right?
To just, I know what you're going to say,
right?
And
to
I
be
agree,
like,
yeah.
No, we're not taking in, like, wounded or really, really ill children. I don't like saying that sentence, right? It doesn't make me feel good to say that sentence, right? Because it is really horrible what's happening there. But you know what all this leads to.
It's a vanguard.
It's, we'll take 30 children, and then all the families have got to come, and then it's 10,000 more, and then before you know it, And I hate it. I hate the cynicism, but it's true.
It's the classic thing that has been used to manipulate us over and over and over again. Mm. Look at this one drowned child that washed up somewhere. Look at this one...
Murdered by their parents, by the way.
Look at this one girl from Kuwait City that was treated badly. Oh, we must go to war then. Look at this one child that washed up on the Rio Grande or something.
Taina, you're being manipulated.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're quite right. I couldn't agree with you more. It's horrible to say on paper, on the face of it.
Mm.
It seems insanely heartless. But no, it's a tool, a mechanism to manipulate us.
Yeah.
It's also possible to send people to other countries to help as well. They don't actually have to physically come to Britain. In fact, logistically speaking, if they're really sick, the journey might endanger them more than actually treating them closer to home.
Mm.
So ideally... The best thing to do, I mean, I do actually want to help those children.
Mm.
I think the best thing to do is find a way to make it work either within Palestine or Gaza itself, obviously a bit dangerous, or a surrounding country, and find some agreement with Israel where you can at least take children and no adults. And they can't take exception to that because it would make them look even more terrible on the international stage than they already do.
It should obviously be the West Bank, Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, Egypt. If those people from Gaza City are going to be displaced, if that's what NETI has decided the policy is, then those places should be the places that take them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not Indonesia, not Sudan, certainly not Germany or Belgium or England, for God's sakes. It's madness.
The former
it's
countries
madness.
Are Muslim, right? Indonesia. So.
Right.
Sudan has got a Muslim population. I can't remember if it's majority.
Even the governments of Indonesia and Sudan aren't that much of, like, that short-sighted and political weaklings. Mm. Even they are like, no thank you. Thanks, but no thanks.
It is worth
it speaks volumes, doesn't it?
South Sudan, which was the part of Sudan they mentioned, is only 6% Muslim as well. So they're in a sort of similar boat to Britain, ironically, because we're about 6% Muslim as well.
And isn't Indonesia, or is it Malaysia? I think it's Indonesia. It's like the most populous Muslim country in the world.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's just an endless number of islands in Indonesia. Mm-hmm. They probably could find an island or an island chain or two to resettle a few 10,000 Gazans on. They probably could do that.
As long as it's not Western Papua, which they illegally annexed from Papua New Guinea. No one ever talks about that one, do they?
Oh, Colin, you'll have to do a segment on that.
I already
have. we'll have to watch it.
Is East Timor an Indonesian thing as well? I should know more about that. Anyway.
But really, the other thing as well is that just when they say, oh, you know, have you no compassion, have you no empathy for the children? It's like, yeah, I do, for the British children,
right?
And this is the thing, what it always comes down to. It's like, it's not a question of whether you have compassion or not, right? There's not a single person at this panel who doesn't have compassion or empathy. but it's like, who do you most prioritize it for? And that's all any person really does, right? And our priority is obviously with the children of this country, right? The British children of this country. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? If it shouldn't be any other way. You shouldn't be getting morally guilt-tripped into prioritizing another country's children.
That's just how you extract resources out of people, is you try and give them an out-group preference, don't you?
Mm. So anyway, as you can see here, reported by the BBC, bring sick children and injured children to the UK from Gaza immediately, MPs are saying. A cross-party group of MPs has written to the government, urging them to bring the sick and injured. In a letter to senior ministers, 96 MPs stress children are at risk of imminent death and any barriers to their evacuation should be lifted. And the letter also calls for children and their families to have the option of claiming asylum or resettling in the UK once the treatment is completed.
Of course.
Right? Traitors.
It's like, it's always there. It's always there. You mask it with something, you know, so compassionate. So just morally, uncontestably morally good. And then you load it with something like that. I'll skip on a bit. So it goes on to say that first group of Gazan children to be brought to the UK in the coming weeks. And this is current. This is a current headline now. Obviously now finally addressing England. And they will be the first children brought to the UK for treatment as part of the government operation, being coordinated by the Foreign Office, Home Office and the Department of Health. And the children will be selected according to the need by doctors working for the Hamas-run health ministry before the World Health Organization coordinates travels. And it goes on to say it's unclear which third country the children will transit through on their way to the UK and exactly how many children will be involved or whether further groups will follow, which they will. And the host country agrees to cover the cost of treatment, including mental health support, as well as housing and living needs for the patient and their companions. And yeah, and this there was also a group work, I didn't jot down the name, but there was a group here that was, sorry, I should have made a note of it, hosted by Dr. Fazana Rahman, again, just head of an NGO, a refugee charity who's helping to coordinate all of this. And it's just really...
So let me get this straight. So there's an ancient desert feud between Judaism and Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Massive land grab in the late 40s. An interminable war since then, where both sides are extremely brutal to each other. Net result is we have to accept terrorists into our land.
More or less.
Thousands of miles away.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it does. But so obviously, as always, you can count on Rupert for the correct opinion on all of this, which is just that the BBC reports that 30 to 50 Gazan children will be brought to the UK for medical assistance. Nobody else will say it, but this is madness. It is not our responsibility. The BBC reports it is understood that some may enter the asylum system after completing treatment. They will all stay. They will all stay with their families forever. There is now essentially a Palestinian refugee scheme. Hundreds will turn into thousands. The answer has to be sorry, but the answer is no. Not when British children are suffering and even dying because of delays in medical care. I will be called a vile monster, but we must put British children first. I make no apologies for stating that.
Yeah, quite right.
Yeah, true leadership from Rupert. Just sensible.
A bit of moral backbone. I mean, right. It used to be... It's crazy that he seems like he's one of the only ones with an actual moral compass and the balls to say it. How mad that he's this one independent MP.
It's like an anomaly, really, how he's even managed to get into Parliament.
Mm. Yeah.
As a decent human being. I didn't know it was possible.
But obviously, the point is that Rupert, for now, is just one man. Mm-hmm. And we all know that the people who are advocating for the Gazans to come to the United Kingdom are pushing at an open door. they will start coming, right? And they will start trickling in more and more. And that's the future for for this year. I don't know what to tell you. There it is. All right. Go to the video comments. Thank you.
Hey guys, go and subscribe to the Manix Games YouTube channel. Every Monday at 10:30 p.m. we're going to be doing a live stream where we show off what we're doing in our current game development. And also, Carl, I know the event that you're going to be attending later on this year in Australia. I actually submitted an idea for a talk that I could give regarding that. So hopefully if I get in, we'll be able to meet in person.
I'll mention it to Carl because he's obviously not on the panel today, but I will mention that to him. Mm-hmm. I didn't know he was going to Australia.
No, nor did I.
No. Never tells us nothing.
So the secret is out that CS Cuba is helping me edit one of my books. And what it is basically the most traditional fairy tale that you can think of that plays into all of the fairy tale tropes, doesn't mock them, just play into them. And I wanted to write a female main character whose virtues is that she's good, loyal, kind, pure of heart, and the only one to wield the weapon is the prince. It will be a while before it's out because I want to do illustrations for it, and making illustrations take a lot of time.
Best of luck with that.
Yeah, I hope it all comes together.
Good endeavor.
Great.
Also, well done to Cooper for helping the community. It's good to see people being brought together by Lotus Eaters. Mm. You know, working together to create things. That's what it's all about, really.
Writing itself is extremely time-consuming, I've always found. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
Come, old brother tradesman, the travel along. Oh, pray, can you tell me where the trade is all gone? Let's hope that these hard times, they will not last long. Soon I'll have occasion to alter the song and sing all the good times of old.
I feel like I need a pint now.
I love Steel Eye Span. One of my they've got some great albums. Really great albums.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing the folk circuit soon enough. Big folk fan.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's necessary. It's a part of the living tradition of England, isn't it? There's some good folk nights in Swindon, actually, surprisingly. The actual locals about. Yeah.
Spirit of England.
Don't know what you're looking at.
Spirit of England lives in Swindon, if you know what you're saying.
No, I've got nothing.
Just shocked in silence.
I don't know anything about the folk scene, folk music scene, I'm afraid.
In
Sorry.
Swindon?
I've got nothing, or at all. Sorry.
So much great music there.
It's one of my blind spots. I know nothing about it. Sorry.
Do an epochs on the history of English folk music if you want. I certainly know that.
Hello, Lotus Eaters. Longtime fan of the God King Sargon here. I wanted to add context to the segment since I live near the Florida truck crash site and often drive that road. There are many U-turn spots on the highway, but they're always clearly marked for emergency vehicles only. They're so that they can make quick turnarounds to respond to road accidents without having to go 20 miles to the next exit to turn around. Here's a similar sign on that very road. In California, it's easy to get a state ID with minimal proof. That ID can then be used to illegally get a commercial driver's license.
So it's about that Sikh guy that killed three people.
Yeah.
I saw someone suggest that he might be the same guy that crashed a bridge in the south somewhere as well.
Really?
Yeah, 5 years before.
Huh. Yeah. I do think that was a bit odd. I didn't actually watch the segment. I think Carl did the segment yesterday about it. I didn't watch his segment, but a couple of super quick things about it. It's clear, because I saw some people trying to defend him, saying, what, he was just doing a U-turn. Like, you're allowed to do U-turns there. That's what that's there for and all that sort of thing. But it was obviously being negligent.
Not in a truck like that.
Yeah, clearly.
Where he did it, yeah.
Clearly not.
Yeah.
The other thing is, it's a bit harsh to say, but, like, did the people that crashed into it not see him doing it, though? Like, he was doing it quite slowly. I'm not trying to put any blame on the victims. I'm not saying that, but did they not see a giant lorry doing a U-turn in front of it? I don't know. It's horrible.
Sometimes
it's just a horrible
stop, isn't it?
It's just a horrible thing all round. Yeah, the fact that his expression barely changed is insane. That's insane. Anyway. Mad, isn't it?
What a beautiful culture. Wow, that noise is just so musical.
Madness.
When we win, this will be the cue to deportation.
It's just that, isn't it? Everyone's celebrating there. Oh, we love Pakistan so much. Like, happy Independence Day. We'll do anything for it, apart from live in it.
Yeah, apart from live there. Yeah, right. Yeah. I do really hope, perhaps it's a far-right fantasy, but I do really hope that future generations will look back on clips like that and say, wow, what a crazy thing that was ever the case. Thank God I don't live in that Britain anymore.
That strange blip in English history.
Yeah.
Any differences, they'll be saying it in Urdu. No, hopefully not.
All right. Do you want to go through your comments?
Sure. Do we have some rumble rants as well before?
Yeah, a couple of quick rumble rants.
Oh, sure. Habsification says there are 2.3 million Gazans and the Israelis want a land grab. Move the Gazans to a different country. And it ain't looking good. True. Habsification says, again, I don't want these people here. This will cause problems. They've been kicked out of every other country they were letting: Kuwait, Egypt, Jordan, Lebanon, Saudi Arabia. Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing, isn't it? The people, the do-gooders who want them over here, have no moral consideration for the people or, you know, for us whatsoever. You know, you're more likely to cover it up if a Palestinian did something wrong.
Almost. The level of criminality, radicalization, militism in that population is been shown again and again and again to be off the charts.
It'd be a massive mistake. Anyway, some comments for my segment. California refugee says, he's got California refugee. He's twice a refugee. The sentiment is rising towards saving the English people. This is just the start, though. Be smart, be prepared, set affairs in order if you want to participate. They want you in jail for flying a flag. Jail is full of people who want you dead. That's probably true. You know, I'm far too well-spoken to be in jail. And I definitely need a haircut. North FC Zuma says, I got five England flags for about £4 at Tesco after the women's Euros. Almost felt a bit disrespectful, but at least I can put them to good use now in Minecraft.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy to build an English flag in Minecraft because it's all squares, isn't it? So, Jimbo G says, I love how the Prime Minister has had to begrudgingly come out and say people should be allowed to fly the English flag. Something is happening. Yeah, I'm pretty sure Keir Starmer said that.
From your segment, Bo, Alex Ptolemy says, sorry, it says here that in my constitution that I can never lose a war. So sorry, Russia, you have to give up.
Yeah. It's as insane as that, isn't it, really?
Well, I'm surprised the White House are accepting that. Right.
I'm sure it's probably
in the back room. You're like, obviously, but like, just come on. At least give a better reason than that.
I imagine that it's many of the groups won't accept surrender.
Mm. We've got Brian Tomlinson here as well. Says, you've convinced me, Josh. Save the union to save the firm clan.
Damn it, I didn't mean to do that.
And then from my segment, we've got Corax80, who says, there's a good reason for Egypt not taking the Gazans. They've been a source of terrorism in Egypt for years. If you look at what Mubarak was doing to the Egyptian people during his reign, you draw similarities with what Tutu Kwir is doing to us. Do you know much more about...
Yeah, there's absolute reason why Jordan and Egypt don't take them.
Mm.
It's not because they're completely heartless.
No.
It's because they've been burnt a number of times. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, in the 70s, Jordan took in the PLO or load of Palestinians. And it almost destroyed their country.
Mm.
So now they're like, yeah, we're not doing that again.
Mm. Well, that's a good point, isn't it? You know, your trust has been burnt, so you decide not to do something anymore. Whereas in our case, we just keep doing it again and again and again. Mm. Just keep getting burned. Omar Awad says, a ridiculous premise they always try to slip through is that they only want... the only way to help the third world is to import them into our land instead of improving theirs or sending them somewhere compatible. Right, but even when you send foreign aid or whatever it is over there, it all disappears, doesn't it? So
it's funny that.
Yeah.
It vanishes.
Maybe just better to leave them all to it. I don't know. And California refugee says, new metagame, time to shift from claiming to be a Syrian refugee to a Palestinian refugee. Still a bunch of Pakistani men.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honourable mention says, by Islander from Maria Manzi says, by Islander and the flag to fly proudly.
Don't fry it.
No, don't fry the flag. No, do fly it. All right. Well, that's all we've got time for today, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you've enjoyed yourself. Have a good rest of your day, and we'll see you at 1 p.m. tomorrow. Thank you.